The hour of recess has expired. The Senate is back in session. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business. Reports of standing committees, and I have a report.
Seeing no objection, reports of standing committees, please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill No. 33, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Richard, Chairman.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I would ask you recognize the Senator from the Second on Senate Bill 1.
Senator from the Second.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 1 with the Senate substitute and the amendment pending be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the Second. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. Amendment was pending from the Senator from the 13th. Senator from the 13th.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment to Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 1 is...
Senator, I'm sorry, it's Senate Amendment 3.
Senate Amendment 3. It certainly is, Senator, President.
I hated to correct a wonderfully dressed red woman today, but the Secretary compelled me to do it, and so did the calendar.
I like your tie, too, Mr. President.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you. It's been a long day, and we haven't been to this subject for a while, so thank you for bringing me back to where I need to be. This amendment is it's a carve-out for diseases associated with asbestos exposure, which include malignant... May I inquire of the Senator from Callaway?
Senator from Troy, do you yield to an inquiry? She does. Proceed.
Where are you from, Senator?
I am kind of a free agent, kind of utility player, kind of really wherever you want me to be from. I was raised in Branson, Missouri, Senator. For real.
Really?
And I was born in Kansas City. I was raised in Branson, moved back to Kansas City, and now I represent six counties in rural central to northeast Missouri.
Well, I feel a little untraveled and a little unworldly. I grew up in Spanish Lake and moved 3 miles to Bellefonte Neighbors, and there I've sat.
I'm sorry. I was waving at you because I wanted, at some point, you were going to need to inquire of someone, and I had a couple of questions, so I just thought I'd go ahead and offer up to be that person.
Well, thank you for offering up. Can
Absolutely.
I help you, Senator?
Yeah, I actually did have an inquiry for you, Senator. You were actually getting ready to explain, and I'm not sure that we needed to do it in the form of an inquiry, what amendment we're on. So if you could, because we've been now two or three times on this bill, and I wondered if you could explain to me what amendment we're on and what it does exactly.
Well, I thank you for the time, because I wasn't sure where we were anymore either. But this is a carve-out for mesothelioma, which includes asbestos and asbestosis and asbestos-related diseases and cancers of the lung and colon and other organs that occupational diseases would affect. I still feel in my heart that it is not fair. If we are going to fix second injury fund, then let's fix second injury fund. When we started out, occupational diseases were not in the second injury fund. That's not where they belong right now. That's not what this chamber was tasked with. We were tasked with fixing the second injury fund. We put this in there and we were all kind of surprised, some of us not, when it showed up. But now here it is, and I cannot support this bill in any form with anything other than occupational diseases coming out.
Okay, and my understanding is that yesterday we had a debate and there was an amendment offered, I think it was your amendment, that just absolutely removed that entire issue from the bill. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and then it's my understanding that, and I feel bad because I feel like one of our senators wants to get out and he's stuck. I think he's just, yeah, you're stuck. Sorry, buddy. and so it's my understanding that amendment was shot down, and you have now filed another amendment, and what it does is it carves out an exception for mesothelioma. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. And when they say carve out, what exactly does that mean? That means that any occupational disease would go through the traditional work comp system instead of the civil court system, with the exception of mesothelioma, which would go through traditional
and other asbestos-related diseases.
Okay, so your amendment goes a little further than mesothelioma, and it's any asbestos-related disease.
Correct.
Okay, but this would not create any special...
Well, it's not going to give anybody relief that might be exposed to benzene in an oil refinery, or somebody that was subjected to any other kind of chemical release somewhere, or coal miners from coal dust, or a firefighter from smoke inhalation. You ever been in a fire, Senator?
I have not. Excuse me, Mr. President? Mr. President?
Senator from the 10th?
May I have unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest?
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my right and your left, I'd like to introduce, I don't think we've done it this session, Chris Shappy. He is a legal counsel to my office, and I'm just really excited that he's here with us today. I'm excited that he was able to offer himself up so that we could get one of our senators off the floor. You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. President.
Let's the Missouri Senate make Chris Shappy feel welcome today.
Sorry, Senator. One of the senators on the floor was stuck because of our line of debate.
Excellent. Is he unstuck now?
He's and it appeared that his presence in a powwow was really important. They needed him back there. It looked like there were some high-level conversations going on between the phone in the back and the phone in the front. I was trying to be respectful of the rules and at the same time allow him to leave.
Senator, you're very accommodating.
And so that's why I decided to introduce my very special guest. I'm glad that he's with me today and every day.
Well, he's such a special guest. I hope he chooses to stay around and not be a guest and stay here with us through the rest of the session.
Now, after how many years have you been here now? 8, 9, 10? I suspect.
And I bet he says the same thing every other staffer says at the end of the session. I'm not coming back.
Yeah,
so anyway,
exactly. And yet he keeps coming. Okay, so
we were talking about occupational
diseases.
Though,
about occupational diseases. And the question that I have for you is this. It's my understanding that if we carved out mesothelioma and other asbestos-related diseases, that any other disease that came from exposure to a toxin would not be carved out. My question to you is this. What happens in an instance where a employer either knowingly or recklessly or should have known knows that there's a toxin that could be hurting their workers, yet they do nothing about it? Is that an instance where that person would still have to go through work comp?
I think it would be. I'm not an attorney.
Okay.
I don't know. But, these laws were written the way they were written just for employers like that you're talking about. And we have good, strong laws now, and I think leaving occupational diseases in there, it breaks that down. It hurts the working guys who it hurts.
Right.
You know, I was having a conversation outside with somebody on another subject, but at the bottom line, what he wanted me to do, it hurt the working guy.
Right.
It never hurts the people up above them. It was the guy on the street, the middle class worker bee that's out there every day that makes everything go round and round for us. These occupations, you know, before I asked you if you ever been in a fire, I'm full of stories, Senator.
Yeah, I have not been.
Well, I've been in two of them, You know, they always thought that I would do something stupid like drop a 2x4 on my head or something. Uh-huh. But I always end up in fires for some reason. And I was in one time underneath a housing project in the city of St. Louis. And the building sat up. It was a high rise. It was probably 20 stories high. It was downtown on the north side. But underneath, in the middle of the building, is like a basement. And off the basement on either side were three tunnels. So you probably had, there's probably a half dozen tunnels. Or there's more than that, probably 10 or 12. And the tunnels were about this deep, and all the pipes and all the electrical ran down those tunnels. Well, we had to crawl into the very end of the tunnel and start taking the insulation off, and then they'd fix the pipe, and we'd put the insulation back on. Well, when you're at the end of that tunnel, you really can't see or hear anything in that basement. And I was at the very end. My partner was about 20 feet ahead of me, and I'd just come out of my time. It's my first fire, too. It was very exciting.
Uh-huh.
But I kept hearing him say, something's wrong. He kept saying, do you smell smoke? And I said, no, I don't smell smoke. And, of course, I was further away than him. And they started the print. What was that?
It was my bad.
Oh, I thought I turned my shoulders the wrong way or
no,
something.
No, no, I had a microphone malfunction.
We'll put them this way just so that, you know. But anyway, they started the print table on fire, and it took all that time for it to get down the tunnel to us.
Uh-huh.
I was 23 years old, and I thought, I never want to die in a fire. It was, I've had accidents where I've broke both my legs, I've been in car accidents, just the typical stuff people go through uh-huh. in life. But I never want to die in a fire. Because we finally got out of the tunnel. So what had happened is a welder three floors up had been welding. He dropped down sparks down a chase, which is an open hole, above that basement area, and there was a print table there. And the print table started on fire, and it was a large, and it ended up being a pretty large fire down there. And we'd have never got out of that tunnel except for this pipe fitter came along, and he was huge, and he grabbed me by my belt, and he crawled out dragging me out.
Really?
But, yeah, it scared me. I didn't want to go back to work the next day. I thought, if this is how it's going to be, because my boss or my foreman called work and said, we're going home, and my boss said, oh, just sit outside. You'll be fine in an hour.
Oh, my God.
But that was like in 1979, 1980, and look at how we've changed with our our safety rules. That would never happen today. First of all, we'd never be that far back in a tunnel without some kind of radio communication or somebody knowing that we were there or some
right.
kind of tagline on us because it's a confined space. But that didn't happen then, and they could have lost a lot of people that day had, you know, he just not noticed the smell of smoke and got somebody to get us out of there. But if you don't think about the working guy when you're working on bills like this, then you're just thinking about profit margins and
well,
what's going to be better for the companies.
And that,
you know,
that's
I don't know. In the
me.
Long run, I think taking care of the working guy is better for the companies, the good companies.
Oh, I think so, and I think that I see that when I see a good employer, because I know just even on something as simple as service-related industries, you can see the difference between two stores, for instance, one that takes care of their employee and one that doesn't. The one that takes care of their employee, you see the same employees there for 20 or 30 years. The one that does not, you see a new face every week. And so I get the importance of that, and I think it's good for the bottom line of the state and the company to take care of your employees. And I guess what concerns me about your amendment, while I think it would be an improvement over the underlying bill, my concern is that there's more than one way to die from fire exposure. I mean,
occupational diseases.
And one of them would be that occupational disease. But if it was not asbestos related, that person would be forced to go through the work comp system, even if they were exposed to something in the fire that was incredibly toxic and caused them some sort of, you know, catastrophic harm later in life.
Well, and that's why I'm disappointed that the First Amendment didn't go.
Right.
You know, that would carve it all the way out. Now I'm kind of feeling like I'm self-centered and self-concerned for my own special interest, which is mesothelioma and asbestos-related diseases. But as you know, in this business, you keep trying. You try to get to the best place you can get.
Right.
And sometimes the best place isn't where you want to be.
Right. And I think one of the things that I've always been very quick to say when it comes to the Missouri Senate is anytime we all leave unhappy, it's probably closer to where we need to be as a state, because you don't want one side to get everything that they want.
That's exactly right.
Then it's a lopsided, agreement of some sort, and one special interest group has won out over the other. The unfortunate thing that in this instance, we're not talking about, for instance, cable versus telephone or something like that. We're talking about people who have been injured on the job. And so this is kind of a more vulnerable group of folks. This isn't someone, those folks don't necessarily have a whole lot of lobbyists down here on behalf. Now, do they have some other groups out there fighting for them? Sure they do. I mean, obviously organized labor,
yeah.
The legal community that represents them in these cases. I mean, they do have advocates, there's no question. But at the end of the day, no amount of what we can do in here is ever going to make them whole.
No.
Enhanced benefit, non-enhanced benefit, work comp, civil claim. If you've got someone who's dying of one of these catastrophic diseases, nothing we can do here is going to make them whole. But what I would like to do is try to give back to them for what they have given to us as a state. And I feel like I'm worried that we're going down a path now where we are cutting out a significant number of people.
I think you're right. I mean, Senator, where is your district exactly?
Okay.
No, really.
No, and I will tell you. So, obviously, I was elected by the people of Kansas City and Grandview, Missouri.
Okay.
And I continue to live and work there, and that's my home. But through the redistricting process from January of this year through the end of my term in 2014, I represent the people of Callaway, Audrain, Monroe, Montgomery, Warren, and Lincoln counties.
That's a huge geographical district.
Yeah, it is. When you think, I used to giggle because, I hear some of my colleagues, especially the senator from Nottoway, the former senator from Monroe, they would represent, 16 counties or 12 counties, and I would kind of giggle and think, I represent some city blocks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I represent from 1st Street to 150th Street, and it takes about 30 minutes to cruise across my entire district. Now I'm in their shoes. And I'm starting to see what an immense job it is to represent so many counties.
Senator, I'm pretty familiar with a lot of your counties.
Oh, how so?
Yeah, I've worked in a lot of your counties.
Really?
And I will tell you, one of the biggest employers in your district is the Callaway plant.
That's true.
You ever toured that plant?
No, as a matter of fact, and I haven't had a chance to tell them yet, I've just freed up
Senator, I think every elected official that serves in this building should tour that plant.
I've just freed up a Friday in March so that I can do that.
To go with you when you do that, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm very proud of that plant. A lot of people from all over this state helped build that plant. I worked on that plant when they were building it.
Did you really?
I worked on that plant when they were retooling it at least 7 or 8 times. And I watched safety evolve in that plant. Do you know what the first thing they tell you when you come in that plant after you've gone through, it's a lengthy process to get in the first place. You have at least, if you've never been in there, if you were going to go in there and be employed in their next outage, you have at least probably 2 weeks of training, intense training. There's safety training, which would tell you everything the plant does, how it works, what the dangers are. Then you sit through a 500 to 700 question psychological exam.
Wow.
To make sure that you are not a risk to the plant or
sure.
The fellow workers. But when you walk in that plant, the first thing they tell you is they want you to go home that night the way you walked in that morning. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Absolutely.
Because that means I can do my job, because I know that their first concern above everything over there. And I've worked in plants where they tell you that, and you get in there, and it's not really their concern. But in that particular plant, when you walk in there and they say that, they mean that. I mean, because you are right to the gate. If they tell you you're not going on the edge of a building on a roof without a harness within 6 feet, you're getting out of here. If they catch you on that roof without a harness and you're 3 feet from the edge of that roof, they're not going to ask you any questions. They're going to tell you you jeopardized your life and the people working around you. You're not going to work in our plant because you're not safe. And I respect that, because you know what that does? causes less occupational diseases.
Absolutely.
And less occupational accidents for people. That's what that does, and that's what a good employer does. Other employers would say, you know, I want you to work safe, but hurry up and get it done.
Exactly.
Well, that's not working safe. Do you have any other questions?
I do. I do. I have
Excellent.
About 15 minutes worth of questions. Actually, I need you to, you're going to need to go meet with some folks, so I would like an opportunity to inquire of the senator from the first. So can we end this inquiry so that I can ask the president to?
Absolutely. I don't know if I inquired of you or if you inquired of me.
Senator
I think
from the 13th has the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. And you might want to go check in with Jansen in your office. Mr. President?
Senator from Audrain, for what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the Senator from the First?
Senator from the First, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. It's, right, I think there may be someone behind you that wants to...
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 5th District, for what purpose do you rise?
President, Mr. President, I will seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, President.
Whoa.
Thank you, Mr. President. I mean, we need a little excitement in here every once in a while. Thank you, Mr. President. To my right and to your right and to my left, I would like to introduce members of the Legislative Black Caucus. If you can please rise. For the introduction, I would greatly appreciate it. Let's make them welcome here in the Senate. Thank you, Mr. President.
Would the Senate make the guests of the 5th feel very welcome tonight? Proceed with your inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate that. Senator, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well, but if I may, Mr. President, may I seek unanimous consent to introduce some special guests?
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Just so folks know, we have members are previously introduced, Representative Rochelle Walton Gray, Representative Sharon Pace, Representative Carla May. Mr. President, I have not yet had the opportunity this session to introduce two of my interns, Blake Lawrence, a law student at the University of Missouri, and Kelsey Moline, an intern from Truman State University. I'm a graduate of that fine institution, and this is actually the first year. I've been here 2 years. This is the first time I've had a Truman intern. And I'd also like to introduce my legislative director, Lillian Williams, who I know is familiar to the body, but if the body could please make
would
all
the guests
these
of the
very
Senator
special.
From the First please rise, and would the Missouri Senate make them feel welcome tonight?
Thank you, Mr. President. I had not had the opportunity to do that.
Proceed with your inquiry.
President. Hi, Senator. My understanding that while there's been a discussion between the Senator from the 13th and I, folks that on both sides of this issue have had the opportunity to sit down and talk, and it's my understanding that they're getting a little bit closer.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that. I think... you know, I've been aware that there have been a number of conversations both inside and outside of the chamber in recent days, and I've said it on the floor several times on this bill already. I think that the circumstances, given where the courts are, given the severity of the situation with the second injury fund and the importance of the other issues that are taken up in this bill, I think that the parties who are concerned really do have a very powerful incentive to try to find a way to get this resolved in a manner that may not be ideal to any, but maybe nonetheless mutually agreeable to all. And I'm happy to hear that those conversations are continuing this evening. I would hope that we're able. I mean, you know, obviously we all stand ready and willing and able
right.
to do what we need to do. But
right.
If we can reach an agreed resolution, that's always better. As we say in the law business, a bad settlement is better than a good trial.
No, I don't know that I've ever said that, but I think that that is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. I will tell you, Senator, that I have not I've not been participating in these negotiations at all, and so I'm not privy to what's going on. And so to the extent that folks are sending me little notes or whispering in my ear saying, what is it? The answer is I truly have no idea. And I also, in an abundance of caution and with every caveat that a lawyer can give, I have absolutely no idea if there's an actual agreement. I just know that it appears sure. They're getting closer. And so I am willing to continue to talk to you and my other friends on the Senate floor while they hopefully work towards some sort of an agreement that the majority of this body can agree to.
Absolutely. And that is consistent with what I've heard as well, that the parties may be closer. And I should clarify that the saying that a bad settlement is better than a good trial is actually something that is more commonly uttered by the judges in our state than the trial attorneys in our state, or the litigators in our state. But
sure.
I have to say my experience in the practice of law, and I know that you've practiced law for many years as well, is that it's not a lot different in the legislative process, that sometimes the parties have to gear up and do what they have to do, but at the end of the day, if there is an amicable resolution to be had, that really is better than the alternative. But
no, I agree. You know, Senator, this may come as a shock to a few people in the chamber, but you and I have never really been able to talk. I mean, I don't really know you all that well. I mean, you live across the state. We haven't really talked an extensive amount. How long, I mean, when did you graduate from law school? What year was that?
I graduated from law school in 1999.
Okay, I was 98, so we're roughly in the same sort of group. And what type of law do you practice?
I'm a litigator. I go to court. The cases that I handle these days are predominantly real estate litigation, which is more commercial real estate than residential. At different times in my career, my concentration has included securities law. I've represented a lot of stockbrokers and broker-dealers. You told me to sell Ford and buy GM when I should have sold GM and bought Ford, those kinds of cases. I've represented parties in commercial insurance coverage matters. Somebody lied to somebody when they sold a hospital or allegedly lied, and the question is, case gets settled, and the question is that something that's covered under a director's and officer's liability insurance policy, or is it not, or is it partially covered, and if so, how does that play out, those kinds of cases. I've also done some trademark litigation.
Oh, okay.
Sorts of things. Nothing.
What was your undergraduate degree?
I went to Truman State University and majored in political science with a minor in communications.
So. All right. And did you always want to be a lawyer?
You know, I actually, as late as my junior year in college, I was not certain whether I was going to head to law school or to business school. My father was an MBA, and I very seriously considered that career path as well. I ultimately came to the conclusion that, these days, especially after what my father experienced, it's a story that I told a lot on the trail, so on the website. My father was one of many mid-level management people who had his career basically wiped out in the late 80s and early 90s. It was a very hard time for our family. And you know, the challenge for him, looking for work in the middle of a very severe economic downturn as we had in the early 1990s, was that, he was competing against 3,000 newly minted MBAs for every job in town, and he was, he had been out for almost 20 years at that point and wasn't very cost-effective for anybody to hire, and ultimately had to change careers to get work, and that was on the other side of a bankruptcy. It was a very difficult time, and I'll say that I came to the conclusion that these days I went to a liberal arts undergraduate university, and I think in this day and age the Juris Doctorate degree is almost a liberal arts degree. There are a lot of different career paths you can take with it, and whereas in my father's generation I thought the MBA was the degree that sort of allowed you to do anything, I think these days it's more and more true that a law degree has become that way, and I ultimately... ultimately settled on law school, but was sorely tempted to do B school. But
no, I totally understand. I the two things I never, ever, ever was going to be was a lawyer or a politician.
Right.
I watched my dad be both, and I just said, if I could avoid those things, I'm going to. And I went into journalism, and was very happily situated as a journalist.
I realize this is your inquiry, but I'm kind of curious as to where your plans went awry, because obviously if you set out to avoid being a lawyer or politician, you must have taken a detour somewhere.
Oh, I'll tell you exactly where they went awry. So I was 6 years, been at the same radio station for 6 years. I'm working 7 days a week. I don't get one day off. I don't get any paid vacation. I don't have any health insurance. I don't have a 401k. I don't have anything like that. I'm making $6 an hour.
Wow.
And I pull into the radio station one morning, and the McDonald's outside the radio station has a big sign. It says, now hiring. We're starting at $6.50 an hour with 401k and insurance.
And then it was time to go to law school?
Well, no, but I called my dad. I'm like, Dad, this is crazy. I just, $6 an hour. I've been doing this for 6 years. I don't even have health insurance. And I see McDonald's is starting at $6.50. I what do I do? And he goes, you can come work at my law firm for $6.50 an hour. I was like, sold. Sold. So I go to work. I go to work for my dad's law firm, and this is between when he's the elected prosecutor and the elected judge. So it's kind of, he's between those two things. And I go to work for him, and I'm only there about a year. And while I'm there, I think to myself, well, you know what? If he can do this, I can do it. I mean, I love my dad. He's a brilliant trial lawyer. He's a great judge. But it doesn't seem like rocket science. So I need to learn a trade. And it seems to me that being a lawyer is as good a trade as any. So I apply to law school, and I go to law school in Kansas City, and fell absolutely head over heels in love with the city. Can't imagine living anywhere else on the planet. It truly is one of the greatest greatest decisions of my life was to go to Kansas City. I was actually born there, lived my first 5 years there while my dad was in law school.
Well, I grew up in Kansas City and still love it very much. When I was coming out of law school, it was very important for me to do a particular kind of work. Uh-huh. And the right opportunity. I was determined to come back to Missouri. I left the state to go to law school, but I was absolutely determined to come back to Missouri. But the right opportunity to do the work that I wanted to do turned out to be in St. Louis, and I was very happy to land there. Still, actually, as recently as a month or two ago, I still catch games in Arrowhead every once in a while. I got to see Andrew Luck and the Colts play there in December.
I wouldn't have changed a thing. I will tell you, I haven't mentioned this very much. I would like to eventually work my way back into journalism. Do you ever listen to National Public Radio?
I do from time to time.
Okay. Are you familiar with their Supreme Court reporter, Nina Totenberg?
I certainly have heard the name and have heard some of those reports, yes.
Let me just straight up say this. She's not going to live forever, and they're going to have to replace her. And I'm throwing it out there right now. I think that it'd be a nice kind of dovetail kind of into my career, kind of finish up on this politics thing, finish up on my legal career, switch back to the radio thing, and just maybe go sit, watch the Supreme Court, do their thing, and then get on the radio at night and say what happened.
So, well, there's
either that or I want to be the scorekeeper for the Kansas City Royals. I'm just throwing that out there if the Royals are listening tonight, I'm available.
I think in an era of term limits, we all have to think that way to one extent or another. But, speaking of the United States Supreme Court, of course, there is a member, and I'm not going to be terribly specific, but there's, of course, a member of that court who once worked across the street here in Jefferson City who caused a stir recently. He had gone some time without engaging in oral argument or asking a question, and apparently finally broke that practice and mixed it up a little bit the other day. That was probably the last NPR report that I saw on or heard on the United States Supreme Court. That said, I say that, and I may have read that somewhere on the web instead. It may not have been on NPR that I heard that, but I'm not certain. It's been maybe a week or two ago, but that was a fairly recent development. But awfully proud to have a Missourian and somebody who worked in this town and across the street from this building on the United States Supreme Court. I think that's pretty neat.
That is pretty cool. Well, Senator, as much as I'm sure our colleagues have absolutely just been riveted by this conversation, I suspect there'll be other times that we could have this conversation. It's my understanding that the senator from the 5th wanted to inquire of one of her colleagues. So I'm going to just kind of sit down and see if she stands up for recognition and kind of go from there.
Well, thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 5th, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to inquire the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, you yield to an inquiry.
At this time?
I'm sorry?
President, I said it this time. Got it right.
You did. There is no speaker in this chamber, by the way.
That's right.
Senator from the 13th, you yield to an inquiry from the senator from St. Louis City, the 5th senatorial district. She does. Proceed.
St. Louis City.
Thank you. Senator, there's been a lot going on today. And I'm basically right now asking you, where are we with this here
well,
Bill
Senator,
1?
Right now, we are working on Senate substitute for Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 1 offered by Senator Root, the senior senator.
We do not use the senator's name on the floor, Senator from the 13th. You refer to him as the senior senator from St. Charles, 2nd District.
Thank you, Mr. President. Offered by the senior senator from St. Charles, 2nd District. And right now, I have an amendment pending, the third amendment on this bill. And what this amendment does is it carves out from the bill. Right now, occupational diseases are included in the bill to put them in the work comp division.
Okay. Senator, let me, before you go any further, let me just say this here. You know, we've been here for what, approximately, I would say, a month now?
Yes.
And we've been in the House for 6 years? How long were you in the House?
I was in the House 8 years.
Eight, and I was in the House for 6. And for 6 years, I had to say, you know that word, right?
Yes.
And then for 8 years, you had to say that word. And so for a whole month, we're trying to deprogram and reprogram, correct?
I think we're doing pretty good.
And it takes a little time, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So don't feel bad when the senator gavel you down, okay?
Senator, look at
The president gavel you down.
Bad.
Okay,
no,
just don't feel bad.
It's all good.
Don't be embarrassed because we have to deprogram to reprogram. So going back to the amendment.
Can we have some respect in the Senate chambers? Keep your noise down and conversations to the side gallery, Senator from Christian, so the two senators can debate and we can hear the debate.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. So, Senator, occupational therapist disease, occupational disease is something that you are concerned about, correct?
It is.
Why is this such a concern of yours?
Well, it's a concern of mine because in my line of work, I see a lot of occupational diseases. I see a lot of my friends and brother members that have succumbed to occupational diseases over the years. And it used to be a joke, don't retire because you're not going to enjoy the benefits. The only one that's ever going to benefit from your pension is your family. And somewhere about halfway through my career, they reduced the retirement age.
To what?
From 65 to 55. We can actually retire at 65. And part of the reason for that was we had a good pension plan that the guys had contributed to over the years. And another part of that was nobody was reaping the benefits of their pension. They weren't living long enough to do it. Unfortunately, I don't know if that practice will continue. I was lucky enough to retire at the lower age. I retired last October.
Okay.
So, and I'm healthy. I didn't work with asbestos very long. I have worked around other chemicals, benzene, chlorine, you name it. We work in all kinds of plants, and so do all the other folks in the working community. Work around dangerous chemicals all the time, and we're taught how to deal with them. We have rights as employees. They have what they call MSDS sheets on the job sites. Those are material safety data sheets where if we're working with something and we're not sure what it is, we can go into an operator's room, which is an operator might take care of a small part of the plant. We can go into his office, ask to see the MSDS sheet for what's in the area, the different chemicals that might be in the area, or different hazards around us, so that we can be prepared and know what to expect, know how to act if something happens.
Senator,
the effect, you know, these sheets tell you everything. They tell you what it will do to your skin, what it'll do to your respiratory system, what you need to do to get away from it, and on down the line. They're very helpful.
Sure. Senator, I have a question. So with SB1, if you are a smoker and you've been smoking for 5 years and you work at a plant for 10 years with asbestos inside that plant and you acquire cancer, how do you determine if it came from smoking versus the asbestos?
Well, the only way you can get mesothelioma or asbestosis is from asbestos fibers.
Okay.
Asbestos fibers are so small that when you breathe them in, as we talked about this last night, you can't release them from your lungs. And there's two kinds of asbestos fibers. There were two kinds used at a plant in my district that's long been closed along the Malian Creek. They had white asbestos and blue asbestos. Now, in my trade, when I first started, we used to mix what they call blue mud. And are you aware where the parking garage is at Crestwood Plaza?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was one of my first jobs. They redid the parking garage there, and they have, you know, when you park in an outdoor parking garage, if you look up, there's pipes running all along. And what those pipes usually are, they're called roof drains, and they take the rain away from the parking lot. But at that time, when they had to insulate, like, 90s and 45s and valves, we used what you call blue mud because it would withstand the heat, it would withstand the cold, and it would keep whatever's in the pipe from freezing. And the blue mud, it was like cement, and that was cold that winter. It was so cold working out there. And we're mixing this blue mud that was just asbestos mud, and you put it on, then you put a canvas, like, cloth over it. It almost looked like cheesecloth.
Okay.
And then you painted it with this like glue. Well, I didn't work with it very long. The industry evolved and they came up with other things. But a lot of the guys that I worked with on that job, they worked with it all the time. And they were probably in their 40s or so when we were on that project. And when that group of guys started, at that time, a lot of guys didn't finish high school. They went right to work. So some of them started as young as 15 or 16 years old. And it was before we had the strong protections for workers of our state and our country that they would start work at a young age for one reason or another. So they still had to support family members then, and, you know, maybe dad died and they had to help with younger brothers and sisters. But those guys had worked with it a lot. That was probably my major exposure.
So, Senator, the question that I asked just a second ago, what you're saying is that you can tell if it came from smoking, if cancer came from smoking versus from asbestos?
Well, let me explain this to you now. Look at me, Senator.
This bill would make
I am
it a little
a
difficult
cover.
To...
I'm not a doctor.
Okay. Well,
but
what
from
what
everything I've read, this is true. And as you know, I used to be a heavy smoker. And I'm very proud of the fact that I don't smoke, and I think, you know, I quit smoking after my husband died because somebody had to take care of my kids, and I wanted to be here to be that somebody. But another reason not to smoke now, you know, I found something that I hope everybody finds someday, and I've got a granddaughter, Prudence Jane. She is more fun than my kids ever thought of being. She's got an imagination out of this world, but the point is, if you don't take care of yourself, you don't get to see those pleasures in life. But sometimes your employer is responsible for helping you take care of yourself. And over the years, not all employers did a good job of doing that. And we get back to where I was and why I'm offering these amendments, because occupational diseases simply do not need to be addressed in this bill. If we are going to fix the second injury fund, we should fix the second injury fund. We shouldn't cloudy or murky the waters with other issues such as occupational diseases.
Okay.
And if we need to work on those, then let's get a bill that addresses occupational diseases and, you know, on second thought, let's not do that. But, yeah, I just don't think it belongs here.
Can you explain to me what exactly will your amendment do? What's your amendment?
My amendment carves out diseases of mesothelioma and asbestosis and asbestos-related cancers to the lung, colon, and other organs of your body.
Senator, I really commend you for, you know, taking up the cause to protect workers. And that's what it's really about. We're here to protect our constituents, not big business, but our constituents. And I've always admired you, but I really admire you now, because a lot of those individuals who are now ill due to the fact that they've worked for 10 years, 20 years in a factory with chemicals of, you know, of asbestos and things of that sort, now to find out they have cancer and they're about to die, and we're making it very difficult for them to get the monies that they deserve, it's very appalling. So I commend you, and I just think that your voters, your constituents should know that they have someone up here that's fighting the good fight for the people, and that's what we should be here for, is to fight the good fight, to fight for those that cannot fight for themselves. So thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the Fifth.
I would like to inquire the gentleman from the...
Senator from the Fifth, there are no gentlemen in the Missouri State Senate.
Mr. President, I would like to inquire the senator from the First.
Senator from the First, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator of the Fifth?
I do. Thank you,
Mr. President. Proceed.
Good evening.
I'm going to get it right. At any rate, let me apologize to the body for getting it wrong. Senator, I've heard a lot about prevailing factor. Prevailing factor is what determines workers' comp and the legislation that occurred in 2005. Can you give me the definition, being that you are an attorney, what's the prevailing factor definition?
You
what
know,
defines prevailing factor?
I don't know if you were in the chamber when I was being inquired of by the senator from the 10th, but during the course of that exchange, I explained that my law practice is focused on primarily business and contract matters. I think in 13 years of practice, I have had one case. It was an insurance coverage dispute in the workers' compensation context, but I think I've had precisely one case that had anything at all to do with workers' compensation law. So I am admittedly not an expert on workers' compensation law. That said, I do have I certainly have heard the reference to prevailing factor. I don't know that I recall seeing anything in the floor substitute, the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 1 that implicates that precise issue. So, again, I have to admit that's not something that I focused on. That said, I actually happen to have a copy of Senate Bills 1 and 130 from 2005. And, in fact, just about three pages into that 51-page bill, I've already stumbled upon a change in the law that was made in 2005 regarding workers' compensation procedure that pertains to prevailing factor. Language was inserted into our statute in 2005 through Senate Bills 1 and 130 that provided that an injury by accident is compensable only if the accident was the prevailing factor, the term you referenced, in causing both the resulting medical condition and disability. And then it puts in quotes the term the prevailing factor, unquote, is defined to be the primary factor in relation to any other factor causing both the resulting medical condition and disability. That is the statutory definition. Now, that very section removed language that had been there previously that stated that the injury must be incidental to and not independent of the relation of the employer and the employee. Ordinary gradual deterioration or progressive degeneration of the body caused by aging shall not be compensable except where the deterioration or degeneration follows as an incident of employment. Now, I'm not certain, as I look through the changes that were made in 2005, whether that particular section was tailored specifically toward the second injury fund, or if that was a section more globally applying to workers' compensation procedure. I think that was a broader provision pertaining to all workers' compensation cases because it's in a section that addresses the commission as opposed to the second injury fund.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator. So, Senator, I'm going back to a prevailing factor. So with Senate Bill 1, Senate substitute for Senate Bill 1, would prevailing factor even be a factor, or are they wiping it out?
Well, let's take a look. The change in 2005 was to Section 287.020, and as I look through the Senate substitute, the first change that I see is to 287.067.
Bit about prevailing factor. Sorry. You messed me up when you got over here. I was
Senator
on the road.
From the fifth. There are no
All right, Senator.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, that guy, that
You're
Senator messed me up.
You're breaking as many rules as the Senator from Johnson. Please proceed with your debate. Three senators on the floor. Senator from the second district, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask that you place that bill on the informal calendar. And, Mr. President, I'd like to speak on a motion, a point of personal privilege.
That bill shall be placed on the informal calendar with Senate Amendment 3 pending. Seeing no objection, proceed with your personal point of privilege.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Just wanted to give everybody an update. We, even though it doesn't seem like it, we made a significant amount of progress on this issue tonight. So I appreciate everybody coming back in after dinner. Obviously, this is a majorly complex issue. We are trying to solve an issue that we have not even been able to bring to the floor in 4 years. So we are continually trying to just solve this massive problem for all of the people that have been injured, all the employers, everybody that's an interested party. And the conversations are ongoing. I believe that tonight that the floor leader and the pro tem, allowing us to continue to have these conversations and bringing us back in really did keep the conversation going. There's no point in all of us staying here all night, because even if we did get something to where I think we could put it down in paper, there's no point rushing through it and keeping research staff here. But Brad, because I know, oh my gosh, I said his name.
Senator from the second, we do not refer to other senators in the chamber.
I'm sorry, I was talking about Bradley Cooper because he looks so much like
Mercer.
Him. Yeah.
You looked directly at the senator from Andrew when you said it. Please proceed.
How you doing? I just asked that we would lay this bill over. It is my intention that we're going to try to get some stuff on paper, be able to kind of show people from both caucuses some definitive pathway to where we can solve this problem next week. So I just sincerely appreciate the floor leader and the pro tem's diligence and everyone coming back in, and there's no point in staying all night. I think we've done a great deal of progress. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business. Reports of standing committees.
Seeing no objection, reports of standing committees. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments has a report.
Please send your report forward.
I would request a waiver of the reading, and I would ask for unanimous consent to adopt the reports in one motion.
Seeing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted. You've heard the motion from the Senate. Hearing no objection, the reports will be voted on in one motion. Senator from the 8th. Senator from the 23rd has the floor.
I would move for the adoption of the report.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd. Does anyone wish to speak on that motion? Senator from the 8th, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I wish to inquire the Senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Senator, I just wanted to briefly talk a little bit about your nominee that you sponsored on here. You and I talked offline. He's listed as an independent. I've looked at this this board or this commission. There's six members appointed by the governor. Currently, there's two Democrats, two Republicans, and this independent, and one vacancy. You want to tell me a little bit about this individual that's listed as an independent?
I do. Mr. Moriarty, I think, would be a great candidate for this appointment. He's a retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel, served in Vietnam in the infantry. He's a graduate of the Citadel. His father and two brothers were graduates of the Citadel, and he currently is very busy helping other veterans.
That's great. You said, I think in our personal discussion, you said he's in great shape. Does he run? You said he's a Marine, so I'm thinking, that, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. You said he was in shape. Or does he work out a lot?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch
you. Never mind. Hey, I appreciate you engaging me in this this discussion. In talking to you, I know this individual is a worthy member of this committee, and it doesn't look like he's stacking this committee. Appreciate the inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator, you recognize the close?
I renew my motion.
Senator from the 23rd renews his motion. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion passes. Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, I move that the appointments of Stephen Boo, John McGuire, Lori Rasmussen, John Sissel, Carolyn Mahoney, Derek Williams, John Collier, Donna Burks, and J. Michael Ponder be returned to the governor per his request. Oh, we need to go to messages from the governor. Sorry.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire the secretary if we have messages from the governor? If they are withdrawal letters, please waive the reading and have them printed in the journal.
Seeing no objection, the reading shall be waived and they shall be printed in the journal. Senator from the 23rd District, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would now, having those withdrawal letters been read into the record, move that the appointments of Stephen Boo, John McGuire, Lori Rasmussen, John Sissel, Carolyn Mahoney, Derek Williams, John Collier, Donna Burks, and J. Michael Ponder be returned to the governor per his request.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 23rd. Would any other senator like to speak on that motion? Seeing none, Senator, you recognize the close.
I close.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 23rd. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion passes. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of announcements.
Seeing no objection, order of business is announcements. Announcements. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. With no further business coming before the body, I move the Senate stand adjourned under the rules.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned under the rules.